Washington, D.C. This is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. If you want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And we're two of the crew members from Warbird Rescue. Call in Thursday nights at 8 Eastern to join the lively discussion of Warbird restoration. Find out how we can put you in touch with a Warbird project in your area. And be sure to visit us online at warbirdrescue.com.
That's warbirdrescue.com.
And we'll talk to you Thursdays at 8 right here on Warbird Radio.
In thrust, we trust. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Well, if you're hearing that harmonica, you know what show it is. It's the Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio. We're coming to you live here at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, like we are just about every Wednesday out there. And it is currently Wednesday, August 10th. And I'm Ryan Keough, your co-host here, and I'm joined with my other co-host, the famed Zane Adams from the Wix Warbird Forum. Zane, are you keeping nice and cool in your beautiful palatial estate with your, you know, air conditioning and swamp coolers on and stuff out there and deep in the heart of Texas?
Oh yeah. This is day 40 over 100 degrees, so I'm inside, I got my shorts on, got a t-shirt on, I'm nice and cool, got my glass of sweet tea, I'm ready to go.
Oh, you just had to throw in the sweet tea. Oh, I'm ready for some...
Well, it's a stereotypical thing, so why not? Yeah,
you know, some saccharine talk this evening is ahead of us, I can tell. Oh, my goodness. Well, you're getting close to a record out there. My goodness. I could feel pity for you, but, you know, it's that same thing every single week. It's like you got the wet heat and I got the dry heat.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to you live tonight, folks, and we're taking your calls and we're talking warbirds here on Warbird Radio. We invite you to join in the conversation and give us a call here at the studio, 478-787-4768. We'll get you on again, 478-787-4768. Or if you don't have access to a phone line and you want to join in, come on over to warbirdradio.com and join in the live chat, the link right underneath the listen live button, and you can chat with us also and submit your questions on there or your topics or whatever you want to do. And we're also over on Facebook too, so heck, if you can't reach us, well, you're just not trying hard enough.
There you go.
So anyways, well, you know, what's the new and exciting thing in Warbirds this week? Well, we're at week number 2 of the post Oshkosh depression that everybody's going through, and everybody's sludging and trudging back to their jobs and back to their back to their little holes and such, waiting 50, well, it's be 49 more weeks now until next year's air show comes around. So I guess we'll just have to deal with all the other air shows that are going on throughout the entire United States for the rest of the year.
Yeah, as dull as they are.
Yeah, well, you know, we've still got a good number of them left. I mean, there's still Wings over Houston. You still got Air Show down in Midland, Texas.
Right.
And so, I mean, you've got some great stuff. You got the I believe, when is Oceania? Oceania is usually a fall show. I thought it was.
I think it's fairly late.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
Chicago, what comes up here in a couple of weeks?
Mm-hmm. Big show.
Wings over Wine Country, which is usually a pretty good air Warbird show, that comes up. Wings over Camarillo, that's the same weekend as Wine Country, I think. So I know Abbotsford, this is this weekend.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
So, I mean, there's a lot going on in the month of August or in the cool parts of the country anyway. So
exactly, yeah.
So, but there's a lot of flying yet to go. I know the August and September are real heavy air show months. So get out there and see your favorite airplane fly.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely, and hopefully escape some of the heat that everybody else is going on at this point. So. Yeah. But
and I know this weekend, I guess it's the Palm Springs Air Museum's P-63 is going to be at the Pacific Coast Air Museum in Santa Rosa, California.
Which, you know, it's kind of neat to see because I haven't seen that airplane fly in quite some time. And it's great to see that is actually not just flying over to Chino, but it's actually getting out and going up to Northern California. So glad to see that coming.
If you like P-63s, which they're kind of rare, but that'll be up there. And I noticed I was reading on Wix here that the P-63, the Central Texas wing of the CAF, their P-63 is apparently very close to getting back in the air. They've just got, you know, the last 5% of a restoration to do, which could happen any day now. So they're all excited over there, and they're still working on their P-39 from when they had that little off-runway experience over air in East Texas last year and hit a runway light with the wing. But it's still under restoration. I think they got wing panels that fit, or at least that's what they were saying on the Wix forum. So tune into the Wix forum if you want the latest news, because it's there. But I'm excited to hear that the pick couple of P-63s are out and about.
So. Oh, absolutely. Hey, there's something about the Bell aircraft. I mean, obviously the unique look of them. I mean, the fact that they were completely divergent from every other fighter design during World War II, with the center mounted cannon, with the rear engine and the door style opening and such. And of course, you know, they really didn't see as much use in, you know, under United States usage, but of course were fantastic Lend-Lease aircraft. And, you know, that's where a lot of the airframes have come out of recently, is coming through Russia and the various former Russian states where they had, you know, fought on the Eastern Front and had gone down. Great to see that coming back in. And, you know, there's, surprisingly enough, there's a lot of airframes of both P-39s and P-63s out there. It's one of those airplanes that no one really ever seems to, you know, care enough about to really put back into flying condition again. It's an airplane that would be a great restoration candidate, but, you know, it just doesn't have the kind of polished feel as a P-51 or a P-38, and it just doesn't seem to have as much attraction for some reason. But I always loved them. Of course, I grew up in Buffalo, so they were built in my backyard. So what am I
to
say?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, and they are unique, and, you know, I think the lack of combat usage and that stuff, that kind of thing here in the United States or with the United States forces is what probably, you know, it's nothing's ever going to equal a P-51 mm-hmm. in popularity like that. But, you know, I mean, and they are real hot rod, and mm-hmm. the Russians, you know, took it to the Germans, you know, with them and made good use of them. And I know, you know, they were used as trainers. Advanced trainers, you know, that was the step you took, I guess, out of a T-6 a lot of times before you got into a Mustang early in the war, was in a P-39, you mm-hmm. know. I remember reading Chuck Yeager's book about him flying those things, and really loved the airplane. You know, apparently they were a little tricky, you know, the center of gravity was different apparently, and, you know, but once, you know, the pilots that flew them, everyone I've talked to says they're just great airplanes.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know. Well, you got to admit that they were advanced for their time, because at that time there weren't very many tricycle gear airplanes out there, period, and even fewer fighters when it comes right down to it. You know, it certainly had some advanced aerodynamics with it. The wing was a little bit, you know, the airfoil of the wing was a little bit, you know, slow, I guess you could call it. And it still had the problem with the Allison, where it was great at low altitudes, but when it got up to higher altitudes, the lack of appropriate oomph made it so that it wasn't nearly as fast and powerful as what a P-51 or a P-38 would have with the turbochargers. Right. So it certainly, you know, but it certainly has its place in history, and glad to see the not only the Centex wing but the Palm Springs Air Museum keeping the Bell heritage alive and keeping it going for many years to come, hopefully. Hoping to see a couple more. I know that Jerry Yagan has several airframes of the P-63s at his facility, so we might be seeing something coming around with that.
Kermit Weeks has got one as well there that's supposedly in Kermit Weeks style of flyable aircraft. But
yeah, that's been one of those contentious topics everybody's been talking about.
Well, they're his, it's his stuff, so he can do with what he wants. But Frank Borman's old airplane, in Las Cruces, out of Las Cruces, I'm guessing it's still flying. Somebody posted on Wix that they've seen it fly, in recent years, so that's another P-63 out there. So
airplane. It all just takes a little bit of money and a little bit of insurance and a little bit of pilot training, and there you go. Have a flyable airplane. Yeah. So,
Imagine parts are a little difficult as well.
That, I'm sure, is probably an issue too. I mean, certainly Allison's are different. There's a good number of Allison engineer cores that are still out there, but I would think that it's got to be kind of tricky with the entire gear system to put the powertrain through the cockpit and then getting it up to the propeller. I'm sure that those parts have really, really, really high tolerances and are really, really hard to find. So
yeah, I can imagine so.
Of course, if anybody out there knows about or is a specialist in P-63s and P-39s or the entire Bell era Cobra lineage, please give us a call tonight. Or if you got any other Warbird questions, Warbird thoughts, Warbird news, anything, give us a call, 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768 to give us a call over here and talk about Warbirds. So we're speaking a little bit about the Russian side of the house, but on the German side of the house, this was a great weekend. If you are a Luftwaffe fan, I tell you, I was just drooling over these photos too. The Flying Heritage Collection had their Luftwaffe Day this past weekend, and with Steve Hinton flying the FW-190 and Bud Granley flying the Messerschmitt BF-109 in the Flying Heritage Collection's stable, and both of the airplanes flew in formation, and wow. That's all I got to say.
Wow is right, yeah.
Oh, my God.
There's some video out there floating around that's on YouTube of those flights and that stuff. And, man, the sounds are just, the sound of that Messerschmitt is unlike anything else. It's got that whine to it. I mean, it's just fantastic. And to be able to see those guys, those two airplanes in the air together, I never thought I'd see an FW-190 flying anyway, And at one time there was just nothing out there for FWs. The Focke-Wulf was just gone, basically. And wow, to see that fly, it's just amazing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was funny because when we were talking to Lyle Jansma last week, he was really pushing that. Wow, we're really living in some interesting times with Everett and everything in the Seattle area is kind of taking a new renaissance and making a. Basically, the entire North Seattle area, kind of like Chino North. A lot of these airplanes that are being seen up there and flying on a regular basis are just it just blows your mind away. Not only the fact that the aircraft are rare. I mean, you just can't find an FW-190. It's very rare to find a DB-601 powered 109 anywhere in the world as well, much less in flying condition. But seeing both of those, and then seeing not only that, but the quality of restoration on all these airplanes, be it through the Sessions collection or through Flying Heritage collection. I mean, everybody up there is just got these standards of restoration that are just top notch. And I don't know if, for the airplanes that are restored in that area or cared for in that area, I don't know if it's the amount of talent that comes out of Boeing that know how to take care of airplanes and keep them in flying condition, or if it has a little bit of something to do with the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, since it always rains up in Seattle. But it just absolutely amazes me, and certainly a you know, a fantastic opportunity for those aviation photographers in the area, which there seems like there's a lot of them.
Oh yeah,
to get a great opportunity to see some really, really super rare airplanes. But of course, our good friend Al Sauer goes by Spooky the Cat. Has been on the forum for many, many years. Posted, you know, great photos of the event up there, and you know, it just is really striking to see that those two airplanes, the, you know, dark green of both airplanes against that kind of grayish sky. It looks almost exactly like you know, it looks like wartime conditions, which I think is one of the great things about seeing those airplanes fly. So hopefully they've got a couple more you know, hats up, or rabbits up their sleeve over the next couple of months, and we'll continue to do their flying days and surprise us with some more interesting things coming in this year.
Yeah, rabbits out of the sleeves is always fun.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to, yeah, rabbit out of the hat.
Sorry, I could.
Yeah, that's all right. It's all right. It's hot here too, Mike. It's
yeah, I am. Yeah, I know exactly. Cooking the brain.
Yeah. And plus, I had a peanut patty before I started this out.
Oh, there you go.
One of those Texas peanut patties, and my God, you know, I'm feeling like I'm on a sugar high. My tongue's going faster than my brain is, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Hey, there was a little piece of news there on the Wix board that popped up, I think, yesterday afternoon or today, I guess, maybe. But the Tri-State Warbird Museum, their P-40. Up there in Batavia, Ohio.
Batavia.
I don't know. I know, that's Midwest stuff, man, you know.
No.
Batavia, Ohio, excuse me.
There was a great Warbird show that was called Wings of Eagles that was in Batavia, New York for a couple of years.
Yeah, okay, bunch of Yankees. Yeah, so, but anyway. in Batavia, Ohio, yeah, the Tri-State Warbird Museum, their P-40M, had its first engine run today. So, you know, they're speaking of Allison's there, you know, and that's a former Royal New Zealand Air Force P-40,
mm-hmm.
and had been restored down there at Allied Fighter Rebuilders in Auckland, and came to the United States in 2008, and they've slowly been, you know, restoring and completing the restoration to that, to flying condition, and if they're getting the engine running, there's bound to be close. So, you know, that's another P-40 in the air, which, man, that's a mind-boggling thing to have as many P-40s around as there are, is.
You know, I think shortly we're going to start to see the P-40 numbers getting very, you know, very close to the active flying P-51 numbers. I mean, because I, you know, everybody says, oh yeah, there's tons of P-51s that are out there flying, but, you know, honestly, how many truly active P-51s are out there flying? I mean, the ones that are flown every single year. I mean, yeah, there's airplanes that are down, have been down, you know, waiting on an annual for 2 years' time, or sitting in a stable waiting to fly type of thing. You know, but you know, P-40s are coming out of the woodwork, and I really think that it has a lot to do with the fact that the restorations coming out of New Zealand and coming out of Australia are really helping to bring the you know, everything back up to, I mean, they've almost got a production line down there, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And they've got plenty of project parts. They've got a lot of engineering experience, the jigs and such, and they've been able to pass the projects through. So I think we're seeing, you know, a really, really new, well, it's a renaissance for P-40s. I think.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah, and I was looking at the, earlier today, I was looking at the Warbird Registry at warbirdregistry.org, our sister site there with the, on the Warbird Resource Group. They're, you know, it's got, you know, A's, a little air, you know, airworthiness is next to about 24 of those airplanes, P-40s on the site. So, you know, and some of them are fairly recent. I mean, there's some old in there that probably aren't flying anymore, but there's, I mean, 24 of them listed on the site is, you know, a fair population of flying P-40s.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's a relatively economical, you know, Warbird when it comes right down to it, too. I mean, the Allison is, you can still find parts for it. You know, it's a pretty straightforward airplane, quite frankly. You know, granted, you've got the Curtis prop issue that they take a little bit of nurturing, obviously, to keep them going. But, you know, for the fact it's, you know, a fairly economical fighter airplane. And honestly, the acquisition cost for a P-40 is, you know, less than a P-51. I mean, the P-51 has that provenance that seems to, you know, always push the dollar amount higher and higher and higher, closer to that of a private jet. So a P-40 is a great, you know, a great step-up airplane, I guess, for many people. So
But
it's great to see. And now, of course, you know, the Tri-State Warbird Museum, a recent Warbird Museum that's just started developing a pretty good sized collection. They've got a Focke-Wulf 190, one of the Flugwerk 190s, under restoration and reassembly. And they also have an FG-1D Corsair that is under restoration as well. And hopefully we'll be seeing some air under its wings within the next couple of years too. But great collection of aircraft that they've got currently there, P-51 Mustang, an AT-6, a beautiful TBM Avenger, and a B-25 Mitchell, and of course my favorite, the Stearman. I just say that under my breath. And
just in case Jeff's listening.
Yeah. Exactly, just in case N3N Jeff is listening. But it's great collection. And for those who know aviation, you go into Batavia, Ohio for two things. You can go in there for the Warbird Museum, and you can stop by old Sporties. So, and if you're in aviation, you know what Sporties is. It's probably a copy of it's probably sitting in your bathroom right now, in fact. So not to say anything about the quality of it, it's just that's where everybody reads it. It's all I know.
I understand.
We talk about a growing collection with the Tri-State Warbird Museum, but unfortunately, there was some news this past week of a collection that was pretty well known in South Africa for many, many years, very rare collection that is unfortunately going on the auction block, and is going to be the collection is going to be divested because of operating costs and such. And that's of course the Thunder City Aircraft Company collection of basically the post-war jets that they've had down in South Africa, three English Electric Lightnings, two Mark F6As and one T5B, three British Aerospace Buccaneers, which those are some of the strangest looking airplanes I've seen. Yeah. And four Hawker Hunters are currently going to be they're accepting bids up until November 30th, 2011. It is, you know, they're basically, you know, trying to get rid of these airplanes. And of course the English Electric Lightning is one of the few airworthy examples, you know, out there today, but it's one of the few that can be capable of Mach 2. One of the most high performing jet airplanes out there. I think it still holds a number of world time to climb records, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, it's a
real hot rod.
Yeah, powerhouse to say the least. So, and of course, I guess in the goofy looking airplane category, the Buccaneers sit.
Yeah, goofy looking, but it's, you know, it was fast. You know, low down. Low level strike aircraft. You know, a la, you know, F-111 kind of thing, you know, not as fast, but, you know, interesting, super interesting airplane. And, you know, that collection, you know, they had a fatal accident in one of their Lightnings here a few years ago where they lost one of their pilots and I think one of the founders of the Thunder City group. And so I think that really took the toll with the operation down there. And, it was a terrible incident. And, you know, so that's got to have had to have had an effect here. And this is the end result, looks like. But it would be great to see, you know, I don't know what the import rules are on this kind of stuff. But I know there was a group in Georgia, mm-hmm. if I recall, it was working to get an electric lightning up. And
I think
flying.
I think it was in Louisiana, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe, yeah. It was somewhere somewhere in the south here that I remember. But, and you know, that's been a long, long-term project. And of course, you know, these kind of jets are expensive to run, and parts and everything else that goes with them is you know, they're complex airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be great to see some of these things come to the United States.
Absolutely.
Just Daddy Warbucks needs to buy me a Lightning. I'll go for a ride.
Well, you know, it's very funny because, you know, everybody talks about, you know, how expensive they are to operate. When it really comes down to it, you know, the United States actually probably has the least expensive fuel that's out there currently.
Sure.
And, you know, honestly, our insurance requirements, I mean, they're not nearly as bad as some of the European Union states are in terms of being able to keep aircraft flying for future, you know, purposes and such. I know the UK has got some pretty restrictive insurance requirements at times. So certainly, I mean, it would make sense to see some of them come over here, hopefully. But, you know, then again, you're also looking at, okay, where's the you know, where can I somehow get the operating capital to keep it going? Will air shows really know what an English Electric Lightning is? Will they pay a premium to have it? Because really, when it comes down to it, it's got to be similar in many ways to flying an F4 Phantom in terms of operating cost, in terms of replacement cost of things. And you hit it right on the head. There's not very many spares to go around. I mean, at least here in the United States, you can go down to a scrapyard down in Tucson and might be able to find some parts and pieces for F4 Phantom still laying around. But you just don't find that with the English Electric Lightning unless you went over to the UK. And even then, I think a lot of them, you know, a lot of the parts and pieces have been just, you know, taken, you know, as scrap metal for the past, you know, several decades since sure. it was divested. So, well, let's hope that the airplanes see their way back into a flying collection. But, you know, we really don't know. And of course, the other big thing too, everybody forgets about is that there's a lot of cost involving import of those airplanes from South Africa into anywhere. Actually, I mean, the transportation cost if you're going to fly them, you know, which is probably very cost prohibitive. You've got that expense, or you could put them on a boat, disassemble them, put them on a boat, and, you know, take them anywhere you want to that way. And
put them back together, yeah.
Yeah, either way, it's going to be a lot of expense and a lot of time and energy onto it, too. So, you know, we'll time will only tell. And, of course, you know, the other thing to think about, too, is New Zealand and Australia are not very far away from South Africa by boat, so
yeah,
you know, might see some of these airplanes going into Australia or New Zealand and populating the already active flying scene down there too. So let's only hope.
There you go. Let's hope. I'd love to see, you know, that Lightning has always been, for some reason, I've always had an interest in it. I mean, it's just a funky looking airplane, and, you know, it's one of those airplanes that, from the Cold War, that struck my imagination as a kid, you know. So it just be neat to see one. I'd love to see it fly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So but we would like to hear from you guys and, you know, get your opinions for those of you listening tonight, get your opinions on, you know, what you think the next generation of some of these Warbird transactions are going to see for us in the air show enthusiast industry and for those of us in the Warbird community. Heck, are we going to see an English Electric Lightning rounding the pylons of the jet race in Reno? Who knows?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give us a call tonight. The lines are open. It's our phone number here in the studio is 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768. And if you're listening to us on the 10th of August, you're listening to us live. It's not a tape show. So unless you're listening to us on the podcast, which is a good possibility. But
yeah.
we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more about Warbirds, and we'll taking your calls. Again, give us a call, 478-787-4768, to talk Warbirds this evening. And you're listening to the Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. If you want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them Man Tires. Man Tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on MyManTires.com.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And we're two of the crew members from Warbird Rescue. Call in Thursday nights at 8 Eastern to join the lively discussion of Warbird restoration. Find out how we can put you in touch with a Warbird project in your area. And be sure to visit us online at WarbirdRescue.com.
That's WarbirdRescue.com.
And we'll talk to you Thursdays at 8 right here on Warbird Radio.
In Thrust, we trust. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
And you're tuning in and taking off with the Wix Warbird Weekly Live here show here on Warbird Radio. It's the August 10th show here, and you're listening to us here about 30 minutes after the hour. And I'm your host, Ryan Keough, with co-host Zane Adams, like always. And we're talking Warbirds this evening, and we're talking about the updated news and things that have gone on around around the airshow industry for the last couple of weeks, and taking your calls here. So if you want to give us a call, 478-787-4768. We'll get you into the main studio line again, 478-787-4768. And we were speaking before the break about the English Electric Lightning that was under restoration here in the United States, and both myself and Zane got the state wrong. It's the Anglo-American Lightning Association at Stennis International Airport in Mississippi. That's the official organization. So if you're interested, but we were talking about the Thunder City auction of the three English Electric Lightnings down in South Africa. Three BAE Buccaneers and four Hawker Hunters. We apologize about that one, but hey, you know, if you want to go take a look at the Anglo-American Lightning Association, you can jump over to their website, which is lightning422supporters.co.uk. So again, that's lightning422supporters.co.uk. So it's a British page for an American organization. Interesting. So I guess they had they cater to the population that probably is interested in looking at it on a regular basis. But
oh well, sure, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. You know, Zane, you know, something came up actually this past week that I kind of got onto my a little bit. You know, it was all over the news, and you know, thankfully, it's kind of been brushed underneath the carpet a little bit since it happened. But you know, I happened to notice this. You know, for those of us that are pilots, and for those of us that aren't pilots, for that matter, you know about the TFR, the temporary flight restriction areas around cities, you know, around areas that are sensitive, including areas where the president is either visiting, or I believe it's also extended to the vice president. But also TFRs can be found around, you know, major sporting events, can be found around, you know, forest fire zones and that kind of thing.
Nuclear power plants.
Exactly.
Air Force bases, all kinds of things.
Yeah. Basically area, you know, temporary flight restrictions over areas that are normally not, you know, closed off to the public, but for some reason or another, have that. And of course they're, it's not like they pop up, you know, randomly at various places and stuff. Traditionally,
they can, but
you know, as a pilot in command, you know, you call flight service beforehand, and they have all the information as to, you know, where these TFRs are and when they're effective for and stuff like that. So that, you know, that's part of now our flight planning program and such. Well, there was a particular break in the presidential TFR when the president was visiting Chicago during his 50th birthday celebration. Of course, you know, President Obama is from Chicago, so it makes sense that he was back there. You know, a 75-year-old pilot, Myrtle Rose, who was flying her 1941 Piper Cub, which very colorful airplane.
Beautiful little baby blue and yellow airplane.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Was went for a hop in her airplane and kind of straight into the TFR zone and was intercepted by F-16s, which. You know,
I don't know how they flew that slow.
I was going to say, yeah, flying very, very slow and such. And you know what? You know, normally it was funny because normally I would have said, ah, heck, you know, the you know, common mistake, you know, oh, poor little Nordo airplane, no radio, you know, that kind of thing, you know, and who knows, you know, there could have been a whole bunch of different reasons and stuff, but I, you know, the media popped up a story afterwards about, you know, the justification and, you know, why she said that she was up flying and why she didn't land immediately when the F-16s were coming into her, were escorting her. You know, she said, well, I just thought the airplanes, the jets were coming down because they thought it was the official, you know, thing.
They wanted to, quote, look at how cute the cub is. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, the rationale behind the fact that she was not aware of the TFR was the fact that the computer wasn't working that morning, so she wasn't able to get on and look at her TFRs, and it was just such a beautiful day that, you know, she didn't want to waste it by, you know, she didn't want to waste a perfectly good flying day, so.
Sure.
She's
in a little flying community, so she's, mm-hmm. you know, probably used to, I can see that, you know, used to just getting in the airplane and, you know, going for a little cruise.
Getting in and going and that kind of thing, yeah, too, and, you know, who knows, you know, I usually look at people that fly, you know, light airplanes like that, you know, really light airplanes without radios and that kind of thing as well, you know, they're just kind of doing their own little thing, but, I, you know, just something about this kind of made me a little frustrated because, yeah. you know, I'll go out and fly my airplane, you know, or I don't have an airplane, but I'll go out and fly a Cessna 152 or a Piper Warrior or whatever. And you know what? In the FAR AIMS, the Federal Aviation Regulations and the Airman's Information Manual, it is declared that the pilot in command has sole responsibility over the flight and
everything about the flight.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? If you can't get on the computer to check to see if there's a TFR in the area, then you can call. In fact, I don't usually check the computer. I usually still call flight service and right. You know, call up WX Brief and, you know, talk to somebody and they can, you know, tell me, oh, well, watch out, if you're flying out of so and so airport today, you've got a TFR in your area or whatever. And you know what, if the TFR was kind of flexible where it was either extended beyond its original time or it popped up earlier because of an early arrival, but this was right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And anybody in their right mind, I feel, you know, if you lived in the Chicago area, I think a lot of people would probably know that the president's in town because, you know, usually is on the news and it's probably in the newspaper, you know, that president's coming into town and
a little, you know, paying attention and a little due diligence
is required,
yes.
No matter how old you are, no matter how cute your airplane. And you know, that was the other thing that got me is that no matter what, okay, you could be flying a P-51 Mustang and an F-16 uh-huh. comes up on you and stuff, you're going to tune to emergency frequency and you're going to figure out if they're right. coming after you.
According to the NORAD spokeswoman, quoted in the article here on AvWeb, the biggest thing to keep in mind, pilots, everybody listen, mm-hmm. is that when F-16s come screaming up to you, they're probably trying to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good lesson there.
Exactly.
Remember
They're not going to come down and look at how cute your airplane is. In fact, if anything, they're probably sitting there going, okay, we've got to somehow intercept and escort an airplane that goes no faster than 80 miles an hour in our airplanes that stall.
No, slow 150.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I mean, and most likely it was low altitude and stuff. So, I mean, you know what? That's putting the pilots of the F-16s at risk at this point when you got that. I mean, and, you know, $9,000 an hour to fly the airplane's baseline, you know, that and that's government money. Uh-huh. You know, that's it just felt very kind of disrespectful actually, and for those of us who are out there and minding the rules and keeping ourselves, you know, keeping our noses clean and stuff, and yes, you know, there are, you can say all you want to about, you know, infringement of our freedoms and rights and that kind of stuff, but you know what, a TFR is there for a reason, and in this case it was the reason for the presidential visit and stuff. But you know what? If it was a firefight, if it was a forest fire, yeah, I wouldn't want anybody getting into the way of the air tankers too, and the support aircraft in that area too. So you know what? a rose is a rose in this case. So that was just one, something that came up, and you know, it sounds like everything kind of got brushed into the carpet. There's a good chance that she won't have any major actions against her at this point. But and certainly we appreciate the fact that she's keeping a great vintage airplane in the air. In fact, she had just won best in class honors at Oshkosh, you know, just a couple of days prior. So we appreciate that. But you know what? If you're out there flying and stuff, and you know, just be a pilot, be a safe pilot, be a conscious pilot, and you know what? If you get called out, admit your mistakes, because you know, I think that looks better against the non-flying public is when pilots don't try to make silly excuses for what they're doing. They actually take some responsibilities for it. You did wrong. Yep. You know what? Suck it up. That's the way it goes. So
there you go. Yeah, and we need all the good news. General aviation needs all the good news it can get. So you know, paying attention and doing the right thing in the airplane is always a good idea. And just don't give anybody any reason to doubt that that general aviation is safe, is real, is a good thing to have around. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because one of the things that I looked at it with is it sounded very, very, you know, snooty. I mean, I guess in a way, which, you know what, 75 years old, you've got the right to your opinions. You've lived through life and stuff like that. But, you know, to the non-flying public, they look at this and they say, oh, that's an airplane that doesn't necessarily, and they're not doing anything. They're just going out there and having fun and stuff like that. Oh, it's not a requirement for them to fly. But, you know, and to those people, those are the ones that'll say, well, general aviation is just a bunch of, richer people that want to go out and just have fun in their airplanes and don't give a darn about everybody else. They don't realize that GA includes a lot of stuff, including aeromedical flights and including, some light transport. And I mean, a lot of stuff. I mean, the basic transportation people and, $15,000, which is cheap for GA airplanes, mm-hmm. Cessna 152 sure. that are just using it as basic transportation to get out and back from, out here in Arizona. There's tons of pilots that use that as their only vehicle because they live out in the middle of nowhere on a ranch. So, there's just a lot. So,
yep, it's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's very important.
But if you've got your own opinions about it, give us a call, 478-787-4768. We always love to hear a little bit of controversy. So if you have a different point of view about it, please give us a call again.
Yeah, give us a call. Let's talk about anything.
Yeah, 478. Yeah, anything in the world. Come on over.
Call us. Hey, there's a changed topic here a little bit, but back on the Warbird news, I saw a little post on the Wix board that the CAF Yellow Rose has ball caps for sale. So check out the Yellow Rose Squadron and CAF. Google them up, and they've got the B-25 Yellow Rose hats in the modern Nose Art, which is kind of a disappointment, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But they've got hats for sale, and all proceeds go directly to the airplane. You know, they've lost an engine in the last year, and the engine's back on, but they still, the airplane still needs money. So. And also the National Capital Squadron of the CAF, their TBM that's been under long-term restoration, they just received a new engine for that airplane.
Ooh.
So they're all excited up there. And they've ended up in there in Virginia, and they've got a new engine. They've got a lot of parts on the way. The prop's been sent out. They're not real close to flying or anything. They still got wings to work on and everything else, but they're making steady progress. And Anderson Air Motors sent them an engine, and so they're that's a big chunk right there. So absolutely. They're excited to have the motor.
That's almost 50% of any restoration these days sometimes comes from that. And of course, it's something that usually can't be done in house. I mean, finding anybody that does overhauls right in house is a rarity these days, to say the least.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would believe me that when we crewed with the B-17 here with the Vintage Flying Museum, Don Chucky, we overhauled an engine one time in house, and mm-hmm. It took months.
Yeah.
and it came out right, and it's a good engine, still flying on the airplane, I believe. But it takes a little bit of work to do that. So, you know,
and, work and talent, people that actually know know the aircraft and know the engines enough that they can actually, you know, pull it apart and put it back together and not have any pieces left over at the end of it too.
Yeah, that's the tricky part.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pieces in those motors, man. Don't get me to radial engines blow my mind. So,
yeah. You know,
I was looking at one of those things open. It's got a round camshaft, you know, a ring, you know. You go, well, how does that work? You know,
exactly. God help you if you leave your wedding ring in there or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They make all kinds of funky gold colors, doesn't it?
It's making metal. It's shiny. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, so that's good news for those guys up there.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. Any other buzz on Wix this week? I don't know if you saw it, Ryan, but about the Red Tails movie is going to be released, I guess, in January of 2012. So
yeah, well, of course.
It's in post-production. And
That's, you know, that's something that kind of came from left field, where everybody at Oshkosh was kind of surprised, too, with it, you know, that. Well, George Lucas was at Oshkosh to right. make the unveiling. Of course, they didn't, you know, unlike a lot of warplane-based movies in recent years, they didn't actually use much, if any, real aircraft in the production of this. It was mainly done through CGI. But of course, if anybody can do it, George Lucas is the person to do it. It'll be interesting because a lot of people are kind of holding their breath to see how realistic it looks. The trailers look very, very promising. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be interesting to see how it all turns out. I for one, am pretty excited because I have a feeling that because this, you know, crosses over and not just, you know, talks about World War II aviation, but talks about the Tuskegee Airmen, that we might be seeing a new resurgence of young people getting, you know, interested in warbirds after the movie is out there. Because I think that, you know, a lot of kids just didn't have the connection to, you know, say Memphis Belle when it came out in the 90s, or, you know, and of course you look at Pearl Harbor and a lot of the historical historical inaccuracies with that one.
Gut reaction, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So let's only hope that the storyline and everything are true to form. It's a good movie and it holds people's attention and it's exciting at the same time. And of course with CGI graphics, you can do anything with them, so it can make it look realistic to the nth degree. So,
And apparently, you know, in some of the posts they've had on Wix, apparently they've done a lot of homework. You know, they were talking to some people that fly P-51s, and you know, there was one little piece that they showed this pilot, and you know, where a Mustang comes screaming up to a bomber formation and slows down in a hurry, and the guy's like, "Well, wait a minute, you know, he can't scream in that fast. He's got to add flaps. He's got to do something to slow down." And they came back to him a few weeks later with another shot of this at this same, you know, piece of film, and they had put in the flaps and done it right. So hopefully, you know, it sounds like there's a lot of work going into it to make it as correct as possible, and I hope that's true to form. It scares me when Hollywood gets a hold of airplanes, because they just, you know, airplanes and guns and certain things, they just seem to have no clue. But hopefully they're doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, CGI bothers me, you know, on a gut level, but I know we'll never have another Battle of Britain type of experience where you've got all the vintage airplanes in the air at the same time. It just can't happen, you know, realistically. And CGI is coming along quickly to fill that space. But you know, let's. I've got expectations that it'll be done well.
Yeah, and of course, one of the things I'm looking forward to is, of course, George Lucas has always been the creator of THX, the audio, you know, the audio experience and stuff. I'm looking forward to the sounds, quite honestly, because, you know, there was a couple of posts or people had talked about the fact that when they were doing the initial audio tweaking and such. They got some great captures of P-51s, local P-51s that buzzed Lucas's ranch, and they did audio captures out there to get the right pitch of the whine when a P-51 comes in and such. So and of course, you know, the full immersion system of the THX experience, I'm sure that it will be very, very richly scored. So I think it'll be
put THX and Industrial Light and Magic together, all kinds of things happen.
So. Oh yeah, yeah. So let's just hope that there's no, you know, Starfade number twos and all the early schlock that Lucas put out on some of the early Star Wars.
And as
long as
editorial comment follows, but Lucas has a tendency to do a little weird stuff every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. As long as there's no Jar Jar Binks in the airplanes.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
I'll be the one that opens my big mouth. I don't care.
There you go.
Well, we're coming to a close, folks. So if you want to get a call in, give us a call again. We're down to the last minutes of the show, but we can take one more call if you get a chance. 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768 to talk to us live here.
And don't forget out there, folks, that the Collings Foundation is still flying around. They are in Indiana and Kentucky, Ohio, Pennsylvania, in that part of the country in the next couple of weeks. So get out and see the bombers. Mm-hmm. Support those guys out there. Checking their tour information. And, you know, it's hard to believe, you know, those guys start in February and they're still at it and will be for another few months. So support them, those guys on the road. And Ryan, you know exactly what that's all about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They need your love. So, you know.
And also, I had gotten some information that there was a collection. It looks like a good number of aircraft that had come up to the Antique Auto Aircraft and Aerobatic Spectacular up at Owl's Head Transportation Museum. The Texas Legends Flying Museum out of Houston brought several of their aircraft up, including their P-51 Mustang and their original Japanese Zero. I believe that the B-25 also was up there as well. So I believe that if you go out this coming, it looks like it's they're still out there, even though the event happened this past weekend. Kind of a rarity to see a lot of those airplanes up in the middle part of Maine. Mm-hmm. So certainly if you're from Maine and you haven't gotten a chance to come down from Banga, come on down to Rockland, Maine, and the airplanes are probably still on display there. But go over to ohtm.org for more information, the Owl's Head Transportation Museum over there. So, don't worry, Zane. They're not going to keep them. You know, the airplanes.
Well, good.
They'll come back to Texas. So
they'll be back. Yeah. They can't stand the winters up there.
But. Exactly. Exactly. And there's only so much lobster you can eat. So,
I guess. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
yeah. Some beautiful airplanes there. But, Ryan, I don't know. You noticed as well as I did, I have a little tribute here that I want to, kind of finish up the show with here. On Warbird Information Exchange Forum is a community. Most of the people listening and they listen to this podcast will understand that the people involved, we talk about airplanes, but the people involved are what makes the site and makes the forum. And we've lost one of our forum members here recently, a fellow Jim Schultz passed away, and he went by the name of Joe Tomp on the forum, and a lot of people followed his posts. And he wasn't a prolific poster. He didn't post all the time, didn't have huge numbers as it goes out there, but he had some interesting things to say and interesting places to go. He had photographs of whenever he went to a museum and things, and he had many photographs, black and white and color, that he had started posting from air shows in the 70s. And some of those images, brought back memories to a lot of people. Air Force Museum photographs from in the 70s, old postcards, old aircraft postcards that he posted, just a lot of old like I said, 70s era warbird photographs that are fairly rare, you know, and these were some high quality photographs, and he was sharing those with us on Wix in the last couple of years. And so, you know, he's left a legacy of that, of at least those photographs. And, you know, several folks, I never met the man, never talked to him, but several folks that did said he was just a jewel of a man and a really nice fella. So just, you know, prayers out to the family. And, you know, our little Wix family here has lost a member. So
absolutely.
Just wanted to bring that up and make sure people thought about him today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what makes a lot of our lives and a lot of our interactions here online special. Is it's not just the airplanes, like you said, it's the people, and it's what makes it enjoyable for a lot of us. We'll keep them in our prayers and hope that he's up there photographing, you know, the warbirds in the sky as they go by. So let's hope with that. Yeah.
And one more little note, if you don't mind, a little personal note here.
Sure.
Today, August 10th, would have been my dad's 101st birthday. And so, you know, dad was an airplane builder in World War II. He worked at North American Aviation and, you know, was just a person interested in airplanes all his life, and got me, you know, he's pretty much responsible for my passions nowadays. And, you know, he was a Renaissance man, and, you know, I came along late in his life and felt like one of the family. So, you know, I miss him. He's been gone, you know, several years now, but today he'd been 101 of all things. So
wow.
Happy birthday, Dad.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Mr. Allen. Well, thank you very much, Zane, and appreciate you coming on this afternoon and, you know, chatting a little bit, and great honors and such. And but we'll
I'm glad you're here too, Ryan. I know you've got some family some news in your family, and you know, just not trying to out it, but prayers go to you and your family as well.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it. So, but we'll catch you, folks. So we won't be here next week, but we'll be here shortly after that with a new set of programs. So join us when we get back. Again, thank you for just tuning in tonight with the Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio.
I wouldn't listen to my people, my friends, and nobody else.
You've been listening to the Warbird Information Exchanges Show, Wix Warbird Weekly Live. You can continue the conversation online right now at the Warbird Information Exchange. It's just warbirdinformationexchange.org. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.